Shortly before 5 o'clock, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program. He is a principal with Veritas Hockey, and he is the former assistant general manager for the Minnesota Wild. Tom Lynn, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys, can you hear me all right? I'm in stormy Minnesota right now.
We can hear you nice and we can hear you perfectly fine, so we're all good, Tom.
Good.
We were talking, you know, Tom, 48 hours from now to the draft, the assembled people, the teams, everybody's arriving in Pittsburgh for the draft. You'll be down there very shortly, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
There you go.
Right out in the morning.
Exactly. And we see on TV, you know, different general managers, they walk over from their team's draft table to another team. You know, you've been on the floor for many a draft. Tell us what is going on the draft floor. What's happening when general managers and scouts get together? Are they just chatting, or are they having a conversation that could potentially lead to trade?
Well, it's a real game, tell you the truth. Sometimes it really is just chatting. Sometimes a scout or GM sees someone they hadn't caught up with or runs over and says, "Hey, congratulations on the new baby." Looking on TV, you see a GM chase down someone, you'd think, "Oh, that's a trade coming pretty good there." But most of the time when they seek each other out, especially the GMs, it's because they want to say something in person and get a reaction in person. The phone on the table is fine for prearranged stuff where you've said in advance, "Well, you know, I might want your 43rd pick. If you want to move it, you'll give me a call, and I'll give you X and Y." That's easy to handle by phone. But if you're trying to work a deal, or if you're trying to get more in it, or try to find out more, the face-to-face is where you introduce that type of stuff.
Tom, you know, at the actual draft table itself, you know, Michael Remus, Kyle Kozier, who you obviously know, and myself were at the draft in St. Paul last year. And, you know, we can kind of see what's happening on the GM floor, but you don't really know what's going on there. At the actual draft table itself, what kind of chatter is happening there, even though you can see that GMs are talking? You know, what's really happening there as far as formulating a pick and or a trade?
Well, I'll give you an idea of what I'll call the standard draft table, because the teams get 20 people to put at the draft table. The NHL is very strict as well. We tried to squeeze in extra people when ownership was changing. We had two owners and everything, but they wouldn't allow it. So you got to pick your 20 people. Most teams at the top end by the computer, you'll have the GM, the director of player personnel, or whoever fulfills that role, kind of in charge of player personnel and amateur scouting. And also the third person would be more on the administrative side, either an assistant GM that does contracts or someone who handles, you know, that part of it, because the GM wants someone next to him. If there's trades or roster moves or questions, someone can answer those right away. Can we fit this guy in? Can the Ranger fit this guy in if we trade into there? You know, those are the three principals at the top of the table. And along the table, you'll have the amateur scouting staff, the full-time guys first, because that's who the GM's going to talk to as things go along. And then, depending how big the staff is, the Rangers from Toronto couldn't fit their whole staff to the table, so they selected the amateur guys. Some other teams, like the Islanders or Buffalo, can fit their whole staff and some of their families. So you get the amateur scouts there. Then you usually have the pro scouts, especially in the case of trades. A lot of trades are talked about beforehand, but in case something comes up on the floor, you want to be calling your pro scout and get him to look through his notes. You have those guys there with their books and computers in case they need to analyze anything. And most teams bring in the NHL coach, which is more of a, you know, just for a show thing, to get them in there, see the other coaches, and see everyone else. Rarely do they have much of a role in the draft, if anything. And then usually an owner or you know, someone's at the table. So that kind of fills out your 20, and everyone has a defined role except for the head coach and the owner.
Tom, when does a GM kind of stop having a say in draft picks? What round? Are we talking after the first round, or sometimes do they kind of stay in the mix after the second?
Well, it's a good question. It depends on style a lot. Many traditional GMs leave it to the director of player personnel once they're comfortable after the meetings and the days in Pittsburgh. You know, all the teams are meeting Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday before the draft. Once the GM is comfortable, he basically leaves it to the director of player personnel. At that point, it especially, and you've seen this when GMs walk away from the table, once you get out of the top 60 or 70, the GM often is, you know, comfortable walking around and seeing, but they'll often check in, because when it comes time to pick, they might run back or give a call and say, "Is everything like we said? In other words, did one of our players unexpectedly fall to us, or are we struggling to find the pick?" And then he might resolve it. But the interesting thing is that, you know, from our analysis, the top 110 picks are the key. Meaning, and some people say 120, but the top 110, roughly, are the people who have the most impact since 1997, the advent of the modern draft. And so it's interesting to see when some teams say don't focus as much on those final players, or some teams focus beyond it and really push hard in the fifth round to get players when statistically it's behind. So it really depends on the team.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Tom Lynn. He's a principal with Veritas Hockey. He's also the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. Tom, a lot has been made about the strength of this draft class, and it's a question we've asked a number of different people. Wanted to get your take on it. You know, what do you make of the strength of this draft class?
Well, I think it's probably average to slightly below average. What you're seeing is a little bit different than most years. I would say in most years, with a rare exception, people say the draft class is weak in November, and then around mid-spring they say it's okay, and then the last 3 weeks for the draft they get excited. And that's only because they're seeing the players and going over their notes and talking to people. So they start thinking, yeah, I'd really like to have this guy at number 76. When you're in November, you're looking for top players. Taking a guy at 76 doesn't excite you, so that's the usual way. This year there hasn't been as much excitement leading up to the end, and that could be for two reasons. One, you know, general strength of the draft, or two, because a lot of these players are roughly equal. You know, some people mistakenly substitute that for being a weak draft class. And so if you look at your list and your number 29 guy is roughly the same as your number 45 guy, you could say, well, this draft doesn't get any better. You know, at the same time, you might say, well, that's not too bad. My opinion would be because this draft class seems so equal and there aren't the usual standouts, there's a great opportunity to grab some guys, especially, you know, past the impact picks for the top 10 that will really benefit someone's team. And there are those sleepers in the draft. People say, wow, you got taken 36 or you got taken 70th in that draft, and they'll be good players.
Tom, when the Continental Hockey League was formed, we heard a lot about, you know, teams being a little bit hesitant to draft Russian junior players, or, pardon me, just Russian players in general because of the threat that they might play in the Continental Hockey League. Does that threat right. still exist, and are teams hesitant now to take a Russian player because of the Continental Hockey League threat?
I'd say yes. I mean, hesitant to take them might be too strong. It's definitely figured into the mix. I'd say in the last few months, the Alexander Semin, Alexander Radulov, Kuznetsov trifecta have made it, you know, very apparent to the NHL that the Russian culture of player and what they're going to do is going to be different than everyone else. So I don't think you sit there, say, in the 20th overall pick and say, we're not going to take a Russian. What you'd say is, well, we had this Russian ranked 20th on skill and talent, but maybe we're going to put him 32nd when everything is taken into consideration. So I don't think many teams would say we're not taking one. It's just when they made their list, they thought, all right, I got to take in consideration, you know, percentage chance that this doesn't work out, not for the usual reasons, like injury or not a development, but just because he doesn't come or has some other issues.
Tom, final question. How much do you think the uncertainty regarding the cap and the prospective lockout will affect draft day trades and free agency starting July 1?
You know, it seems to be affecting it not at all. I don't have an inside look this year into why it's the case. It doesn't surprise me. Before the last labor crisis there back in 2004, it affected the draft not at all. This time around, I don't think any observers are expecting to see a sea change in the CBA. C meaning SEA as it goes there. But, you know, if there are changes, that they're not going to be enormous, and they may be perspective changes along the way. So I haven't heard of anyone changing their draft, either trades or cap issues regarding the CBA thing. Some teams may be doing it because of their own situations, saying, all right, we have more or less to spend, or, you know, that. But it's not directly related to the CBA so much as their own situation. So I think it'll be business as usual.
Tom Lynn, principal with Veritas Hockey and the former assistant general manager for the Minnesota Wild. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and have a great time in Pittsburgh.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care, Tom. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Brian Munns is going to join us live from Pittsburgh. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. I feel like I'm in a video game with that without soundtrack. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We are better known as the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's go back out to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we're joined by the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, Brian Munns. Munzie, how are you?
Medium well.
Medium well? I hear it's hot there. Can you confirm that report?
Yeah, I think it's 34 degrees right now Celsius. We got out of the plane and got our gear and jumped into the cab, and the first number we noticed was 101 Fahrenheit here. So she's a toasty day in downtown Pittsburgh as everybody arrives and looks forward here to a big 4 days.
That is a plenty toasty warm, that's for sure. From a Jets fan's perspective, probably a good news afternoon with the various reports coming out that Evander Kane's management met with Kevin Cheveldayoff earlier today, and that, well, certainly not signed, Evander Kane and the two sides are discussing, are having conversations and seem to be on the way to getting a contract extension done.
Yeah, Kevin Cheveldayoff had a good meeting this morning with Craig Oster, who's Evander's agent, and they met over breakfast and continued that for probably close to 2 hours or so. And, yeah, it was positive. Like you guys mentioned, you know, there's nothing signed, sealed, and delivered after one quick meeting here. But obviously to have the two sides in conversation at this point is a good thing and a good start to the week.
Munzie, you know, we're 2 days away from the draft here, approximately 2 days away from the first round of the draft. Do you think that the Winnipeg Jets have focused on a position, or do you think it's a list and they're ready to take whatever player is best available for them?
Well, I think when you look at it right now, you take the best available player. And when you look at the depth chart, so to speak, that a lot of the scouts have prepared and the different bureaus and that kind of stuff, you would think that it would probably be a defenseman that comes his way to Winnipeg. But, you know, you never really know until you get to that scenario and find out who trades for who and which teams in front of you may jostle around. So I think if you had to guess right now, it probably would be a blue liner. But, you know, I think that's still something we're not going to know until we hear about it live on Friday.
Brian, the team has a few pending UFAs, Tanner Glass, Wellwood, Stapleton Jones, Flood, and Mason. Do you expect any of them to sign before July
1? You know what? I think that's one of those probably questions that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to get posed tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the first time that he talks to the media here since arriving in Pittsburgh and getting his whole staff together to kind of see where everybody thinks the organization should be. So, you know, to be honest with you, nobody really knows the answer to that question except for Kevin, obviously. And I think just from a personal standpoint, I'd be really surprised if any of those guys did get done in the next couple of days, because there really hasn't been much indication over the last, 48 hours to 3 or 4 days that, you know, they're looking to go down that road right now. I think they're more focused right now on figuring out which six players at present they're going to try and choose here over the weekend, starting Friday and then going up to their round seven selection on Saturday.
15 minutes past the top of the hour, we're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Brian Munns, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. Munzie, the other big RFA that the Jets need to get under contract, who's been the subject of plenty of chatter, is Andre Pavlik. I mean, you were around the team all year. Did you get the impression that Andre Pavlik was happy in Winnipeg and that this, you know, the talk about the KHL may just be a way to sort of gain some extra leverage?
Well, there's no question. Andre loved his time in Winnipeg. He told me that countless times, you know, not only when we were on radio here on TSN 1290, but, you know, just when we were in conversation, either on the plane or out for dinner or wandering around, on the road or whatever it may be, because, you know, Shane Nattie and Dennis Bayak, myself, obviously close to the club more than anybody is. And you get a really good feel on what the players, have their read and what they like and they don't like and what's going good and what's not going good and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was 100% positive for Pavlik, both on and off the ice. So, you know, I think now it comes into something that Winnipeg people are just starting to, I think, maybe notice and more get used to, and that's the business side of it. You know, everybody would love to come and play for $2 million a year. Everybody would like to have their guys come and play for $2 million a year. But, you know, it's all about market price now and what players of equal value are getting with other organizations. And right now, we're hearing that Pavlik wants possibly a little bit more than what the Jets' first offer has been. We're not exactly sure what those numbers are, but that seems to be some of the words that are leaking out a little bit here from sources that won't confirm it. But, I guess we're just going to have to kind of see. I think it's much like the Evander Kane situation, where they're early in their talks, and there's lots of room for the teams to go back and forth. And with the KHL thing popping in there, you know, I think that just maybe adds a little bit of oil and gas to the fire here, just to see, A, if the Jets are going to bite or be worried about it, or B, if, you know, Pavlik's camp can use that as a bit of a bargaining tool in their favor or not.
Brian, final question here. You were at the draft last year. You're obviously there this year again. Can you compare maybe, it's obviously not as crazy as it was last year. We know that. But can you compare maybe the organization, the scouting, and the whole staff and how they feel this year as compared to last?
Well, there's no question. They're a lot more, I wouldn't say relaxed, because I don't think you're ever relaxed when you're in the midst of building and continuing to build a hockey club. But I know they're much more, you know, at ease kind of as to where they are. You know, it's not like they just got thrown a team inside their lap, and you know, the scouts have been given a great opportunity here to go around and see their young players and find out exactly what they have in house. Last year, you know, I think they had a bit of an idea, but they really didn't know, because they obviously weren't focused on what was then the Atlanta Thrashers. So, you know, I think everybody around, including myself, has a good look here as to what the organization has inside, and you know, they can start building here and get this thing going in the right direction with a mindset of, you know, we need to get players in here that want to win every night and build that culture that True North did with the Manitoba Moose, and then obviously we're able to start to instill in many of the players that moved from Atlanta to Winnipeg as the season continued.
Brian Munns, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. You'll be hearing from him tomorrow, Friday, Saturday. You got a busy week ahead of you there, Munzie. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You guys are killing me. It's 100 degrees. I'm walking uphill towards the rink here. Hopefully I can make it to tomorrow.
Well, fingers crossed. Thanks very much for joining us, Brian.
Adam Toy's got the defibrillator here. We'll all be good.
Thanks, Munzie.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brian. Let's head to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to Hustler and Lawless. I'm not Hustler. Neither of these guys, well, Ezzy might be Lawless, but I'm not sure. We are better known as the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. H&L are down in Pittsburgh. You'll hear from them again tomorrow. Ezzy, that ad for, you know, Pita Pit, healthy eating. You know, just throwing that out there. You might, you know, you broke a chair already in the course of this program, so you might want to head down to your local Pita Pit and, you know,
definitely
see if you can get some tofu into that diet or something along
tofu,
those lines.
Maybe I should consider veganism. You know, we're an hour and a half away from the game. I should, yeah, definitely consider a healthier choice. Watch my low carb, watch my, what are they called? Dead carbs, low carbs, high carbs, whatever.
What's dead carbs? What's
dead carbs?
I don't know, the bad carbs. There's good carbs and bad carbs. But anyways,
I think that's cholesterol.
Oh, cholesterol,
it's good cholesterol and bad cholesterol.
Just, all you had to do was say cholesterol, because I always make sure that whatever I eat is high in cholesterol.
We know. And saturated fats.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In fact, trans fats, which are banned, you've managed to import your own special trans fats. That's
right.
Impressive.
Well, you've heard of the Atkins diet. What I'm on is the reverse Atkins diet.
I understand. That's attaboy. Richie, over under a number of beers as he has at the football game this evening?
Two and a half.
Two and a half. That's a quarter, Richard.
Well, you're only allowed one per visit, so.
I think you're allowed two per visit.
One. It used to be two. Oh, Trust me, I know these things.
You would know these things. You know, the Bombers obviously get underway, and we'll talk a little bit of Bombers coming up in the next segment. We'll be joined by our good friend Darren Bombing to preview tonight's Bombers Tiger Cats exhibition game. You know, thought we'd talk a little bit of the boys of summer.
Yep.
Gold Eyes had a big win earlier today down in, I believe, Sioux Falls.
I was at the game last week. Had a great time.
Yeah, exactly. It was always a great time. I was there a couple weekends ago. I think I went with the wife on a Saturday night.
Moon Drew, that's your first drop of the wife on air.
No, I dropped that on. I've dropped that on there before.
Not since the marriage.
It's really? Okay. It's okay,
you
Richie.
You said the wife. That's part of our impression of you is saying the wife. Now he actually is doing the impression.
Right, but Drew's all good. He's wearing his wedding ring, so.
That's true.
That's right.
Anyhow, yeah, let's talk baseball.
Yeah, let's talk a little baseball. So, I mean, the Toronto Blue Jays, congratulations, Richard. You're their new starting pitcher tomorrow.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow, what happened?
I've never seen a team that loses three starting pitchers within the span of three first innings.
Yeah, and Drabek's going to have a second Tommy John surgery if he hasn't already had it. I don't think he's had it yet. He's going to have a second Tommy John surgery, and then there's rumors that Drew Hutchinson also is going to be having Tommy John surgery. Not yet been confirmed. And then Brandon Morrow on the DL.
And that oblique strain is the kind of thing you can't do anything about. You just have to wait it out.
It's a linger, especially for a pitcher.
Yeah.
Especially for your best pitcher.
Because you put all your torque on side of your body there. You put all the torque and the ferocity when you deliver your pitch. And Brandon Morrow's been having a career year.
I think I got an oblique strain when I broke that chair earlier.
But if you look at their starting rotation, being the Blue Jays, you have Ricky Romero, who's struggled this year. Yeah. Hasn't been great. And you have Henderson Alvarez, who can't seem to do anything, right? He's not striking anybody out. You know, his pitches, his change-ups, sinker, all that stuff just not working. And then you're tossing in, you know, are they going to toss Villanueva in here? They had Chavez pitch yesterday. Today, there was Coelho, I predict.
No, Carino. I don't know if it's Joel or Joel Carino. Right. They brought him up from AAA Syracuse.
Yeah, they lost today.
Yeah.
They claimed David Pauly from the Angels off of waivers today. If you look at David Pauly's numbers for his past few games, I mean, his ERA this year is 4.35. The guy doesn't really strike people out.
Isn't Pauly a reliever?
Doesn't really walk anybody, which is okay. But he's more of a long man in an okay long man. Yeah. So maybe they're going to move Villanueva into the rotation, and they put Pauly where Villanueva was. In any event, when you're pitching against the Red Sox, injured or not, the Red Sox, the Yankees, Baltimore, and Tampa, and you're playing them 18 times a year, and you're rolling out that rotation, you can't score 10 runs like last night every night.
No, it's not a recipe for success, exactly. I mean, they lost 2 out of 3 to Milwaukee this weekend, or this week. They should have lost all three. I mean, Axford blew the save for Milwaukee yesterday. The Jays were up.
He's been brutal, too.
I know. Trust me, he's on my fantasy team. I know it all too well. The Jays were up, or the Jays were down going into the bottom, top of the ninth there, and they were able to pull that one off just strictly on the back. I mean, the only thing that's keeping the Toronto Blue Jays afloat right now is Colby Rasmus, Brett Lowry, Edwin Encarnacion, and Jose Bautista.
Right.
And of the four, yep. I would say Batista's been the lesser of the four.
No, I mean, Bautista's been on a tear with homers lately.
I know, but you look at what Rasmus has been doing.
Yeah, maybe Lowry's been the... I mean, Lowry's been going in Milwaukee now. He was traded from Milwaukee for Markham, so he was pumped up for the series.
Yeah.
But they're all playing tremendously well. Rasmus is probably the most inspiring for Jays fans, because the Jays fans, Encarnacion has really been hitting all year. Batista's a 45... home run guy, and Lino Lowry's got all the potential. It's Rasmus who also has the potential, but it's really been performing well. He plays a great defense in center field. That's a core there. The problem is the injuries, obviously, and you blew a lot of games to start the season in the bullpen. And to me, and Jeff Blair wrote this in the Globe, you blew your chance early in the season when you had no injuries. You didn't take advantage of when the other teams had injuries.
You're right.
Now you have injuries, and the other teams, like the Yankees, went on a big winning streak. The Jays are 4 or 5 games out of the playoffs now, and are they going to trade for a guy like Jeremy Guthrie, who's going to cost you a mid-level prospect, but but he's not great? And I know he's pitched in the AL East for Baltimore, but he's going to give you a 4.5 ERA. Can you not fill that internally without giving up anybody?
He's certainly not going to be the answer. Jeremy Guthrie, I mean, that Colorado team is atrocious.
Yeah.
But Jeremy Guthrie was, I mean, I know that you go to Colorado and you have a higher ERA and everything because of the lighter air, but it's not like he was anything to write home about when he played in Baltimore.
No.
I mean, he's a middling veteran at best.
Yeah.
If you're the Toronto Blue Jays, and we're about 70 games into the season, we're approaching basically the midway point of the season.
Well, they usually consider the 4th of July to be around the halfway point. Yeah.
The halfway point, just a little bit before the All-Star game, right?
Yeah.
If you're the Toronto Blue Jays and you have these injuries, we mentioned Drabek, and we mentioned Hutchinson, and Ricky Romero, like Richie mentioned, is struggling. Mm-hmm. How do you not make a trade, or do you just consider that this season might be a write-off? At this point, you're 500 with these injuries. It's going to be tough to finish any better than 500. You almost have to either make the decision now make that trade.
I don't think you make that trade.
I don't think so either. Now, the fans aren't going to like it, but I was just in Toronto. The Jays are back. I mean, they are popular. People are talking about them. People are wearing their apparel.
Well, averaging 35,000 or 40,000, right?
I don't know what their average is, but every time you watch a Jays game, there's a bunch of people in the stands. And they have a crazy following on the road, too. And you watch Milwaukee. I mean, people, I'm sure, from Winnipeg went down, Minnesota,
Chicago. Seattle, there are a lot of people
Chicago.
There.
Yeah. So they have a great following right now. And, what's 1 year? I know for fans saying, well, it's been, 18, 19 years since we won the World Series, since they've been in the playoffs. Sure, that's the case, but Alex Anthopoulos has proven to be one of the better general managers in baseball. He's not going to make a panic move here, especially if he doesn't see the possibility of making a run. They are right now 35-34. They are in last place in the AL East.
Right.
So it's always the way you look at it, right?
Sure.
Because, the teams that they're chasing, there's two wild card spots now, so the team you're chasing has 38 wins. So you're really only 3-4 games back of the actual...
But it's more so than the wins. It's the number of teams you have to bypass in order to get up there. Because, right now, you're in last place in a loaded AL East.
And you have the same amount of wins as everybody in the AL Central who play each other.
Of course.
And you have the second most wins out of any other division except for LA.
And it's been a long-standing lament of Toronto Blue Jays fans that if they played in any other division, they would be a playoff team. This year, they would be a favorite for a playoff team as opposed to, bringing up the rear in the AL East.
You wonder if they can turn... I mean, you wonder what they're going to do with a guy like Yanel Escobar, who to me has plateaued. And, he can't really hit for power, doesn't run, fields well, but doesn't really hit for average, gets on base pretty well for his career, but not great. Like, what does he do that well? Score runs, but anybody who's put in front of Batista and those guys score runs.
Right.
So to me, maybe they turn a guy like that. So they're not turning a prospect. They turn a guy like that into a starter to a team that needs a shortstop. Maybe that's something that they do.
The question, then, who do they plug into that shortstop position?
Sure.
I mean, I don't think they have a ton of, their depth. I mean, their number one prospect, I believe, is Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah, he's catcher.
Yeah, catcher. Who
yeah,
they got,
nobody,
who
they
got
I don't in think the they have anybody readily available
right.
to plug in.
D'Arnaud they got in the Roy Halladay deal from Philadelphia.
The question is how, you know, maybe you bring somebody in another deal or something like that. But Vizquel can match Escobar defensively, really. And if Escobar's hitting like he has all year, which is brutal. You know,
it's a fair
a few homers doesn't do anything really.
Shifting away from the Jays for a minute.
Yeah.
I think he's a Canadian. I don't think enough Canadians talk about him. Joey Votto, what he's doing right now in Cincinnati.
Crazy.
Is crazy. I mean,
crazy.
You know, he's got a batting average of .369. He's got a on-base percentage of .490.
Wow.
He's got a slugging percentage of .665.
Those are all nuts.
These are...
More walks than strikeouts.
These are bonds on HGH, the clear, the cream, and every other steroid numbers.
Well, Drew, forget about Barry Bonds. We haven't had a Canadian hitting like this since Larry Walker.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if Votto can keep this up, Larry Walker, I don't think ever had numbers that
stood
over
up.
The course of a season that are this good.
I know, they're pretty good, but remember he was playing in Colorado.
Sure, he had the later air there. And I don't think enough people are talking about Joey Votto.
There was a stat that I think it was Tom Verducci tossed out. That's of Sports Illustrated and MLB Network, Tom Verducci. Joey Votto has only hit, as of June 6th, Joey Votto has only hit one pulled foul ball into the stands in his career.
What?
Yeah.
How is that possible? So when he's pulling the ball, he's only hit one ball foul into the stands to his power?
Has only hit one foul ball into the seats in his major league career. Pulled one foul ball.
Well, that's incredible. You have to be in such a zone.
Quote Votto, I haven't hit a long home run foul in my whole career. If he hits, he hits. Is that not the craziest thing?
I can't do that in softball.
Yeah, on right. Yeah, exactly. Neither can any of us. On right and O2, I think we're talking about that. I think that was, I guess, last week or 2 weeks ago. Crazy. He's a left-handed hitter. He doesn't pull the ball foul.
Richie, I think Drew has a good point here. I mean, Larry Walker, much celebrated player when he was with the Expos and then moved to the Rockies. I mean, he was one of the greatest Canadian players of all time.
Yes.
I mean, that's not...
Great defensively, too, with a great cannon.
Right.
Yeah, right field's harder to play than first base.
Isn't it even more impressive, though, that a guy like Joey Votto, you just mentioned that article, how accurate he is. Obviously, when he decides to take a cut, he obviously, you know, he makes sure it's in play. But a guy like Joey Votto is doing this at a younger age than Larry Walker did it at. Larry Walker really hit his peak later on in his career. Isn't Joey Votto only about 24, 25 years old?
I'm pulling up Walker's career stats here because it'll be interesting. Now, you have that Colorado inflation in the course of the steroids era, though Larry Walker was never suspected of doing steroids, but just he played in Colorado. Some of his years were nuts, Drew. One year in 1999, he had a batting average of .379, on base of .458, and slugging of .710. Like, whoa.
I mean, those are huge numbers. I mean,
it's crazy. Those numbers are nuts.
What impresses me most about Votto's numbers. I mean, what's so in baseball? It's so rare.
He had better slugging percentage than .97 OPS. Excuse me.
It's so rare in baseball. I mean, the odds in baseball, the numbers in baseball bear out that more often than not, you're going to get out than you are on base.
Oh, for sure.
You know, recently, the only guys recently is Bonds was able to flip that around based on all the walks and the intentional walks he took. If Votto can continue to do that.
MVP, 100%, question. Especially with Matt Kemp being injured.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, there's no like you at this point in time. Even if he keeps putting this up, you know, there's no question about it. Even if he plateaus back to a sort of a more normal level, he's probably going to win
one foul ball.
If he keeps putting up these numbers, like he'll get the MVP in the American League.
He might. You're not too far off about that. He certainly might. Does he have a chance to be the best Canadian baseball player of all time?
Chance, absolutely. No question
about
it.
Do you expect that when his career is over?
He'll be in a conversation, Fergie Jenkins, Larry Walker, for sure.
Yeah, it's Fergie and Larry, and depending on how you rank it, probably,
people
right?
People want Brett Lowry to get in there, obviously. Justin Morneau, people thought would get in there, but the injuries have set him back.
Yep.
Apparently the Jays called on him a little while back, but apparently they call on everyone. So.
Yeah. Before we quickly go to break, I got to mention something. You know, we're talking baseball. Biggest baseball fan we know is probably Matty Leibel.
Yes.
You know, a couple weeks
ago. You guys might be 2-3, though.
Well, we're pretty good baseball fans, but Matty's, you know.
Remus, too. Let's give Remus a shout-out on that one.
He did his whole baseball trip and everything else. Play baseball with Matty Leibel? It's a good thing he's a fan more than a player.
Ooh!
Wow, let's go to break.
Wow.
That was a shot.
You're listening to Hustler and Lawless, powered by the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to Hustler and Lawless. Hustler and Lawless are away. You're joined by the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And for all those who thought we could only talk hockey, we proved them wrong last segment with that great baseball chatter.
We can talk baseball and we can break chairs.
Well, no, you can break chairs. You're an expert at that. But we can talk baseball and we're going to talk some football now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome to the program, he's a good friend of ours, and he is the soon-to-be beat writer for illegalprocedure.ca, Darren Bombing. Darren, good afternoon. How are things?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing very well, thank you.
How's Ezra doing?
Well, he already broke a chair, so you know we'll discuss that with you. We can discuss that with you later off air. If you can get Ezzy a workout regimen, that'd be great.
Darren, it was a black mark on the Hustler and Lawless show, let me tell you.
That sounds like it.
Darren, Bombers exhibition game, the final exhibition game of the preseason tonight goes at Can-Am Inn Stadium, not Investors Group Field, obviously. You know, you've been at practice day in, day out. What position battle are you watching the most coming into tonight's game?
The one I've been watching the most, and it may not be the sexiest position battle, the one that most fans will be watching, but the biggest question mark on this team is the offensive line. Last year, obviously, they were loaded with a lot of talent with the departures of a lot of those guys to different teams or to retirement. It's really only Steve Morley, as far as today's lineup goes, that'll be returning from last year's offensive front. You know, you got Jordan Teremina, Paul Swiston. They're going to be working the tackles today because Glenn January and Andre Douglas are both out with lower body injuries. You know, Chris Greaves, Chris Kowalczyk, those guys are going to be working the inside along with Morley. The player I'm going to be watching really closely is Justin Sorensen. He's somebody who's looking to be that number one backup for kind of all the utility positions. He's going to be backing up center today, but I can see him working playing tackle. And then someone else we might see that'll be interesting is first draft pick Tyson Pencer. And he's slotted to play right guard today. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him line up at tackle as well.
And that's where the Bombers hope to see him one day line up permanently, because he would be a ratio buster at that point if he plays out there. You mentioned Glenn January and Andre Douglas. They're both out of the lineup. You know, so much of a team's success when it comes to the offensive line has to do with continuity. The fact that they've both been banged up, how serious of a problem do you think that is for the Bombers that potentially entering their first game in BC, they won't have had their starting offensive line playing together?
Well, the team has been pretty tight-lipped about their injuries, and you know it's not much of a surprise in the preseason. But January has a lower body injury. They've kind of gone the way of the Winnipeg Jets and just naming it upper body or lower body. Andre Douglas apparently has a hip. I guess that's the happy medium between the upper and lower body injury. But both of those guys are expected to start come week one in BC. Really, today's all about watching the backup guys and who's going to be able to fill into those positions if there is injury or if someone's level of play falls off. So we'll see how it goes. But there's tons of position battles. The defensive backs, the wide receivers are the other one I'm going to be watching. Somebody who I'm definitely keying in on is he's going to be wearing number 13, Chris Matthews. He's a 22-year-old rookie out of the University of Kentucky. So there's someone you can cheer for, Drew.
That's right.
And, you know, he's somebody who's definitely using his size. He's 6'5". He's a little bit underweight right now. If he wants to be, you know, Jamal Richardson type wide receiver in the CFL. But he's somebody I can see definitely making an impact with this team.
Darren, I think you'd agree wholeheartedly that the Bombers' defense was a huge reason why they got to the Grey Cup last year. And obviously there's been some changes. The biggest one's right in the middle there with Doug Brown, obviously one of the best Bombers of all time. He's obviously going to be going to the Hall of Fame. What do you think the Bombers' defense is going to have to adjust to most, whether it's him or a guy like Odell Willis leaving? How do you like the Bombers' defense? Do you think they're going to be as strong as next year? And basically, can you tell the Bombers fans that everything's going to be all right with Big Doug Brown not there this year?
Well, you know, to tell all the fans that everything is going to be all right, I don't know if it's that simple. I think this team definitely has a lot of the critical pieces they had. That was part of that quote-unquote Swaggerville defense last year. They got Tim Burke back as their defensive coordinator. That was by far the most critical move this team made. But I think the biggest change and the biggest adjustment that the defense is going to have to work through is, bringing in new players for different defensive situations on that defensive line. You got you know, Fernan Kashama, Andre Carroll, Ryan Lucas, Alex Hall, Brandon Collier. These are all newer names, players that have either, you know, new this year or new last year that are going to be filling in for some of those interior defensive line spots, you know, where, you know, they lost Doug Brown. And, you know, as far as the outside goes, Fernan Kashama, Jason Vega, those guys, their roles are going to increase huge, you know, with their ability to step up and into a starting role on the defensive end.
Darren, you talk about Tim Burke. What about offensively? Gary Crowden, you know, team's getting going for their first home exhibition tonight. What are your thoughts on him thus far? You've been at many of the practices.
I like what he's doing. You know, it's interesting. The team has said that it's going to be a mixture, 50% of what they did last year and 50% of new Gary Crowden stuff. Gary Crowden, obviously, you know, he's been in the NFL. He's worked with, you know, top-end Division I schools such as, you know, LSU in the NCAA, and now he's in the CFL, and he likes working a very spread offense. He likes sending his wide receivers and his slot backs, you know, and slot back essentially will be a new position for him to kind of play with two slot backs. You know, and even three in some formations, but he'll have the ability to really spread the field, and I think that extra 15 yards that the CFL field has will work to his advantage, so it should be interesting. Something interesting to watch is that Casey Crehan, he's the new defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He was a coach with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers over the last two seasons on the D-line and with the linebackers. And this is his first defensive coordinator position in the CFL. He's been in the league for about 8-9 years. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he tailors his defense today to that Bomber offense, which is likely going to be doing a lot of the same things that they did last year.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Darren Bomming. He covers the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for illegalprocedure.ca.
Darren, over the year, the past few years, the Bombers have been blessed with some pretty good running backs. Fred Reed, and then you go back to Charles Roberts. And then obviously Chris Garrett last year got the last touchdown we thought was going to be at Canadian Stadium, but a couple of guys that have come in, Bloday Dorzin, which I think is probably the best name ever in any sport, and Chad's... Oh, is it Blau? Is it Bloday?
Bloudy, but he actually prefers to go by T, nicknamed T, so that, okay. That makes it easy. It's T Dorzin, and yeah, he's a really interesting prospect. He's got a little bit of speed to him, but I've never seen a running back with bigger biceps in my life. The guy is huge in the upper body department. You know, him and Chad Simpson, obviously, who spent time with the Indianapolis Colts winning the Super Bowl in 2006. He's got NFL-caliber speed, broke his foot, and has kind of fallen out of the NFL. I think he's trying to make his way back, you know, to the big paychecks in the United States. But Dorzin, Simpson, and the Canadian, Anthony Woodson, all three very capable backups for Chris Garrett. So if Chris Garrett stumbles or wants to come out and take a rest, you know, Simpson and Dorzin are going to be great change of pace guys for the Blue.
Darren, last question, and of course you got to end it on special teams. It's been a headache for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for a number of years, and I'm sure Troy Westwood is listening intently. Justin Pilardi did a good job with his field goal kicking last year. The team wanted more in terms of the kickoffs. Mike Renault, not a great job as a punter. Eric Wilbur has been brought in. He's an import. What do you think his chances are of winning both jobs or maybe even taking the punting job from Renault?
This is by far the most difficult question for anybody to analyze and answer. As far as the special teams go, you know, Eric Wilbur being an import, you know, he won a national championship with Tim Tebow in Florida. He's a very, very capable kicker. He's a capable punter. I think what the team is really looking for is, you know, more consistency out of Mike Renault or more consistency out of their punter. Mike Renault can kick the ball. He can absolutely boom them when he needs to. He can put the ball where the team wants to put it when he needs to, but it's his consistency that struggles. You know, I don't have the answer. I'm not sure if you know, putting an import in that kicker-punter position is something that the Blue and Gold want to do. It really depends on, you know, the rest of the team and the ratio in those departments.
Darren Bomming, thanks very much for joining us on the special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we look forward to seeing more of your writing on illegalprocedure.ca when it gets underway in the next week or 10 days.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Darren. Enjoy the game. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back. One final segment, the special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, filling in for Hustler and Lawless. We were just talking off air after that great interview with Darren Bomming about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and, you know, there seems to be a look. There's an aura around the team of disappointment over with how the stadium deal went this year. People feel misled. At least that's my perception.
Sure.
But in terms of the on-field product, Richie, you had a good comment about about Buck Pierce and the quarterbacking, where people haven't been talking a lot about it, but you're wondering why that is.
Yeah, I read Paul Wiesek's article yesterday in the Free Press, and they're talking about how there hasn't been much attention on the quarterback and the health issue, but what about the production issue? I mean, in the CFL, Buck Pierce, who I really liked heading into the Bombers just last year, though. He threw more interceptions than he did touchdowns.
Right.
And if I'm a fan, I'm concerned about that. And I know they talk about the backups, but they clearly think Buck is the best. So if they think Buck is the best, and that's what he did, then I'm concerned, considering that the East is now strong with quarterbacks again.
Ricky Ray in Toronto. And
Burris and Ray have probably seen their best days. Doesn't mean they're not productive.
Right.
But there seems to be pretty good quarterback play across the league for the most part. And if you have a quarterback who's thrown more interceptions than touchdowns, I'd be a little bit concerned.
I think you're valid in your concern there. And I don't know why. It's a fair point that it's not being talked about a lot. And there's some thought that maybe Gary Crowton and his new system is going to alleviate some of those issues from last year. But I'm a really big Bomber fan, diehard. I have season tickets with Ezra. That just goes to show you how dedicated I am. But that's not a position I'm concerned about. And I don't know if it's because Alex Brink and Joey Elliott have shown me enough in terms of the behind-the-scenes stuff or in the backup roles to leave me with an error that I have some confidence in the quarterbacking.
I guess the issue I have is if you're concerned about other positions, it doesn't mean that if you're more concerned about other positions, it doesn't mean you're not concerned about this position.
Right. And Richie, I think you are right. I think there are concerns here about Buck Pierce, not just his health, but how good he's going to do and how his arm is and, how many touchdowns he's going to throw. And, he's got to limit his turnovers. But, you got to hope that, he gets off to a strong start here. And though, if you're a fan, that Brink and Elliott are both good. I really like Alex Brink, and I think that backup role, I don't think anybody's won that job.
Like
Joey Elliott's pretty good, too.
It seems like Elliott more than Brink.
It'll be close. It'll be something to see. Elliott's been hobbled a little bit, so that might push him to the third by default.
If he likes a spread offense, though, that arm's going to help.
He's got a good arm. That's it for this Wednesday edition of Hustler and Lawless, a special edition with us, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you liked what you heard, listen to us Saturday afternoon, noon to 3, here on the station. I'll be on Friday anchoring the live draft coverage as Munns and Lawless and Hustler are down in Pittsburgh for the NHL entry draft. A big thank you to our guests, Elliot Friedman, Darren Drager, Tom Lynn, and Darren Bombing. Big thank you to Alex for his great job behind the controls there. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Until Saturday afternoon, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more great sports coverage here on TSN 1290.